Okay.
So can we ask more questions?
So I've got some sort of general questions, but you know, I'm sure that you know, you can sort of go off on tangents. I mean, that's so much of the stuff that I don't know that I want to learn about. So you've seen my letter. I'm basically focusing on economic development, and I explained to Fabio that my hypothesis, if I have one, is that open source technologies can maybe generate different or enhance economic outcomes in comparison to technologies that are licensed under the variety of different proprietary licenses that are out there. So my hypothesis is that open source software is good for development or economic development in a nutshell. But obviously I'm here to sort of find out if there really is a difference. Obviously I think that there probably is one, but you know, how it differs from proprietary licenses. I don't know if that's something that you, what your opinion of that is.
No, I am answering the questions, and then later you.
Oh yeah, okay.
Because I like to do it. We can talk for like 30 minutes, and then you talk 30 more minutes. Is that fine for you?
I'm ready.
Well, what was? Do you have a question?
Yeah.
Or you want me just to comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, just comment on that. That's my sort of hypothesis.
Yes, I have an intuition that that's true, and I agree that I think that open source software is better for 90% of the companies that do software development, and maybe 99% of the users. But this is just an intuition, and I have reasons for having this intuition since I work and do research in software for 20 years. But I'd like to see scientific research showing that, and I never saw that. The closest to that I saw was a research in the European market showing that, I don't know if you saw that, but showing that something like 90% of the software developers work in companies that don't make money selling packaged products with licenses, but they make money providing services, software development services, customization, integration of systems. So it's something like 90% of the employees. I don't remember the numbers. Don't quote these numbers. I'm just guessing. But you probably can find the document. And something like 85% of the money that's the economy of these companies, like the the amount of money that income of the companies, we say that?
Or turnover.
Turnover, maybe. 85% of the money that the companies in this area make is money in companies that don't sell software as a product with licenses, but companies that deliver services related to software development. And I think in Brazil it's the same, or even the numbers are even higher. Most of the industry here is providing services, and even some of the ones that do sell software, selling the licenses, they could work in another way based on providing service. And I think that if you see software as service provision, then it's much better than you have an open platform that you can look at all the software and use different pieces with the freedom that free software gives you, and that the proprietary software doesn't give you. So I think having a common base, open source base for this industry is much better for the industry in general than having a closed source model. But this is just my opinion based on my 20 years of experience in the area and reading what I read in the last 20 years. I'd love to see a scientific work showing this using a scientific method, more structured research. So maybe your thesis can help with that.
And to enlarge slightly on service provision, are you talking, because services could encompass so many things. I mean, from my background, I mean, you could be building, you're talking about customization of existing applications. I mean, could you explain a little bit more about the services?
Yeah, the services. So customization is one. So adapt the software to the needs of a particular client. And this is much easier to do if the software is open source.
Mm.
And so if it's easier to do, then my guess is that it's easier to make a business out of it. Facilitates the work of the entrepreneur. So customization is one. Another is training. So you can, there are companies that give the software for free but make money doing training users on how to use them or training managers. And
similar to the Red Hat model, is that is the
which one?
The Red Hat Linux, but that's more to do with support, isn't it? They offer the support.
Yeah, so support is the third thing. Yeah.
Okay.
So first customization, then training the users. Well, for example, you can have this is a stupid example, but you could have train a secretary to use OpenOffice, or you can train accountants on how to use GNU Cache, which is an open source software for accounting. Or you can use train audio engineers on how to use Audacity, for example. Things like that. This is one thing. And the third thing is support. If the software is complex, then you can give it for free, but customers can choose to hire your support and would pay a fixed amount per month or per year. So you have people providing support. The support can be from simple things like email support, phone call support, or can be a company, a person that goes in the customer's office to help make the software work there. I think that there's a large market for that. Another market is education and training on how to develop software using open source technologies. So we can think of companies based on, we'll have a few of our alumni started a company, it's called Kaelon, and they sell courses on software development, and all the sources are based on open source tools. So how to use open source tools to develop software.
What was that called? KLM?
Kaelon. Caelum. Maybe you can call them and try to set up an interview with them. They are very young entrepreneurs. How do you say that?
Entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
Caelum.
I can give you. And if you maybe you can write to Paulo. Paulo.Silveira@caelum.com.br.
that we can set up, either go there or have dinner together. And he's a very nice guy. And his brother, he'll open the company with his brother. It's Guilherme Silveira Caio.
And both of them graduated from our program in computer science.
And are they supported by the USP, or is it
no,
affiliated?
No,
or is it private?
Completely private, yeah.
Okay.
We have, USP has a incubator for startup companies. But unfortunately, our programming uses very little this incubator. Now we have one company there. It's called InfoMobile. If you want, you can also talk to them. I don't want it to be that interesting. But he's a former student of mine and another former student of our program. And they do software development for mobile computing, things like that. Well, they can, if you're interested in how difficult it is to build. They're a different kind of company. Guilherme and Paulo, they have a company that tries to make money doing training, and almost everything is related to open source. Well, everything.
And do they actually provide training on various open source packages that obviously don't pertain to them, or do they actually develop their own software?
They have also their own software, but I don't know if they do training with their own software. They have a framework for doing web development. And I think they have a course on web development. The courses are not in the tool. They have a course on web development. And then they happen to use that software that they developed. And then they have a course on agile methods. Do you know agile methods?
For project management, yeah.
Then the course on agile methods is based on Eclipse, which is open source, JUnit, which is open source, Selenium. All the tools they use are open source. And so the business is constructed on top of open source. But I don't know, they probably don't sell. We do open source training. They say we do software development training. But they happen to use only open source stuff.
Okay.
And this other company, InfoMobile, they sell software development services.
Okay.
So a customer says, I need a software to manage I'm a doctor, I need a software to manage my clinic. And they develop the software who's using open source.
And they only use open source, or they've got a preference for open source technologies?
They have a preference, and I think they only use
open source.
Well, they just, probably if a customer said, no, you must use Microsoft Access, they said, okay, but they just started like 1 year ago, and I think everything they did was with open source.
And obviously, because one of my questions is it seems sort of self-evident why you'd go down the open source route, but in terms of cost, flexibility to change and adapt.
For a startup, it's very good because you don't have an initial barrier of buying all the licenses. So they have access to almost any kind of software without paying anything. If they were to use a proprietary base, then they'll need to buy the operating system, the development environment, the database, and all the pieces. And for a large company, maybe that's ridiculous. There's no difference. It's so little money that makes no difference. But for a startup, that's really important.
Mm.
So, for example, there's another company that was a small startup 4 years ago, now is a big company, and we helped them to achieve that, which is Dispago. They do a credit card on the mobile phone. They turn a mobile phone on a credit card and mobile payments.
And is that, is that in Java, or is that...
It's in Java, yeah. The client, yeah, everything is Java. And they told us. So they started with two programmers 4 years ago. Now they have 105 employees. They 1 million users using with their software in the mobile phones, 1 million copies. And they were in the lecture, they said they manage like 20 million reais per month, like almost a quarter billion reais per year is going through their systems.
Yeah. And is that just in Brazil, or is that...
It's in Brazil, in São Paulo. I can arrange you to go there if you want to. It's very nice. They use extreme programming agile methodologies, so going to their office is a very interesting experience, seeing everything happening. You look at the office, you see the things happening with posters in the walls. But the thing for them, they use only open source. And they said that when they started, a very small startup, they didn't have money to buy an Oracle license, for example. And even if they had, going from one stage to another to Oracle would be they would need to get investors to put a lot of money to be able to do that. And instead, they use a cluster of MySQL databases. So they said with zero cluster, they could have one machine with MySQL and would work. And then they could build a system and show, and then could even sell the system to Oi, which is a big cellular phone company in Brazil. And then once the system was sold, then they need Oi is then. Oi has millions and millions of users. Then they need to make the system scale, but they were prepared for that because they can use MySQL clustering. So nowadays the system runs and they have dozens of PCs in parallel with MySQL clustering, and it takes care easily of...
But it was very easy to scale
up. And so now they have 1 million users. They say that if in 3 months they need to handle 10 million users, they just need to buy more machines and take care of the clustering. And then, but for doing that, when it became really big, they hired consulting from the MySQL company. I think it's based in the US. Then a guy from MySQL came here.
And so MySQL, is their model supply and support a bit like the Red Hat? Or going back to those different service provisions that you referred to, MySQL is obviously is open source, but they provided training or stroke support to
yeah. So they got the product for free, could build a prototype, and then they knew that they would be able to scale when they needed. And then when the time came, when Oi paid them big money, then they were able to hire the consultancy to make sure that the scalability would be done in the right way, because they are managing real money there. Mm. So they can afford
it's interesting that it's going over. They're actually relying on MySQL. I know my background is in, I've sort of worked in software development, and I know people are sort of have. Some of the companies I've worked in is an aversion to going down that route. You know, people would rather pay the money and say use Oracle or use
the proprietary. Maybe you can interview him, but what he told me is that if the only option would go through Oracle, he wouldn't have succeeded, because he didn't have the option to have Oracle from the start. He didn't have the money. Now he has, but 4 years ago he didn't have. And he said that he's very, very happy with the choice of MySQL.
And if it, I mean, from a, I suppose more, but that's more of a technology question. But I imagine if money wasn't an issue and say Oracle was open source, would they have been able to scale? Would the scaling have been as easy? Or is that difficult decision to?
What's the question?
Yeah. I mean, from a technical perspective, say money wasn't an issue,
okay.
Say Oracle was open source as well, would the scaling have been as easy as was
well? It would, if money were not an issue, then probably if I had all the money in the world, I would buy the best Oracle. I would pay 1 million reais for the license and start using it. And then, but probably there would be scalability issues, but later. But it, because right now with the load they have, I think that they'll need clustering with Oracle also. And maybe they'll need to hire consultancy to help set up the cluster of Oracle machines with high form Oracle. So I think it would also be possible. Just that it would cost more from the beginning.
And in terms of the again, I guess I'd really need to speak to them, but the actual, do you know much about the differential between the costs of, say, MySQL consultancy? I mean, the obviously because it's the bread and butter of...
I don't know these specific numbers, but then maybe you can talk to him, then you can ask. So I suspect, I don't have a scientific proof, but I suspect that the fact that the entrance cost is zero and the open source model enables the creation of many businesses that otherwise wouldn't be able to be created. So Pago presents itself as a business that was possible because of the open source model. So maybe they would be able to do the same thing, but it would be much more difficult. They would need to get these investors paying millions of reais without, just with a plan written on paper.
And then lose the, their own ability to direct the business.
Okay. So we're talking about the ways of making money. Yeah, I think this training, consulting, consulting and support. Training, consulting, support. And customization. I think these are the major ones. Do you remember of another way?
I think these are the major ones. There are some weird corner cases that
and
are different.
Well, there's
mostly.
Yeah, that's the Google way, which is advertisement. But I don't remember of any open source software or company that made money on their advertisement as Google does, but one could.
I mean, is the Google? Google have their own sort of R&D. Is there? It's a web. Everything's sort of web based. Are they? They're not really. Do they use open? I'm speaking for the wrong. But in terms of, I'm assuming they probably do use open source, but
they
various things in their back end.
They use a lot of open source. They almost only use open source, and some people in the open source community are not very happy with that because they use, but the things that they develop, they don't redistribute as open source.
But
they don't need to. The license, they are respecting the license. The license is not. Now there are a few a different license for that case, but normally, until GPL2, I think, and they allow you to do that without any problem. Now I think GPL3, that there's an option that you can say, if you use that to provide a service on the web, then you must redistribute it again. But almost no open source uses this license to the moment, maybe in the future. So they are legal with the licenses, and I think they do help a bit, at least.
Is that more of a token gesture to try and, is that almost like a move to so people don't, the open source community don't get more annoyed with them and...
Yes, if people start to get more annoyed, then people start to use this license more and more. But right now, I don't see too many people annoyed with that. In particular, I think it's fine that they make money providing services using open source, and they do have some programs that help promote open source. For example, they have the Google Summer of Code. Are familiar with that?
The Google
Summer of Code.
Summer of Code.
Code. They provide like 4,000 scholarships around the world for students to work on open source projects. So 4,000 scholarships, it's about $5,000 the scholarship. So it's like $20 million they give per year, which is very little for them. I think they could give much more than that. But maybe the problem is that it's difficult to find 4,000 good projects to support. But they do every year since 3 or 4 years ago. And so I think that's a very nice program, not only because they are putting $20 million in open source, but they are showing the world that they want to promote open source, and that doing open source projects is fun. So it's nice. So they hundreds of thousands of students in the planet know that Google is giving scholarships to work on open source, so they are helping to spread the word of open source. So this is one thing. The other thing, they do have some libraries they provide. Is the libraries
they provide a few stuff as open source.
Stuff as open source.
And they contribute to a few projects also.
Yeah. So
but there are lots of things they do. They are not open source also. So.
I think some very radical open source fundamentalists, they in their minds, everything should be open source in Google, for example, or maybe everywhere. And so that's the ones that are not happy with Google, because they make billions of dollars using open source, and not everything they do is open source. But I don't subscribe to that. I think it's fine. For example, their searching algorithms, that's the heart of their business. And that's not open source. It's a secret.
Yeah.
I think that's fine.
Because, I mean, that's, again, because it's a web, it's over the web, you know, you wouldn't sell that as an application to other people. You're using it sort of directly, or you're interfacing with it directly, and you're never going to see the back-end code, so it's still software in the sense that it's code written, but...
And this is this search algorithms, it's almost the only reason for Google's existence. Millions of people go to their site because they have the best algorithms for doing this search. If they didn't have already, if 10, 100 other places would have the same algorithms, Google wouldn't exist.
Because it's an algorithm, again, I suppose, I don't know if this is something that you have an opinion on or you know about, but because it's an algorithm, is that covered by copyright, or is that covered by patent? It's not necessarily...
I think it could be covered by patent.
It's an idea.
It probably could be covered by patents, not in Brazil, but in the US. But I don't think they patented it, no. They actually explain the basics of the algorithms, it's public, but the details, the finesse that makes it work so well, they keep it to themselves. Because when you patent, you must make the information public.
But, and that's basically
the reason for
it's interesting. I think I've been hearing in the press actually something about it.
Okay. What else?
Okay. Let's start. The history of as far as you're concerned of RSS free and open source software in Brazil. I'll just tell you my sort of in layman's speak. What I've heard from as an observer in England, I got the impression from the media
in the UK that I'm thinking around 2003, it seems to coincide with the Luna coming in. I don't know if that's the case, but around six years ago, there seemed to be a lot of publicity about open source in Brazil. And Brazil appeared to be sort of, I don't know, holding the torch for open source software. That's
More or less.
So that's what I've sort of seen. So
So it's a big difference. There is a growing open source community that started 10 years ago or more than 10 years ago. And independent of governments. But then what happened, a lot of this movement, I would say that the Workers' Party, which is the party of Lula, embraced this model 10 years ago or more than 10 years ago.
Before they came to power.
Yeah, before they came to power. So then, like 10, 15 years ago, they came to power in a few cities, and then the governments of the city started to use open source in that particular city. And it happened also in a few states, in particular in Rio Grande do Sul, the southernmost state of Brazil. The Workers' Party was in power for 12 years, I think, in a row, re-elected several times. And in that period, they built a solid base for open source in the government there, but the open source community is not only government.
Yes,
it's everywhere. It's in companies and I think that's because of that presence of the Workers' Party for 12 years in Rio Grande do Sul. They established there the FISL.
Oh yeah.
Foro Internacional de Software Livre, which is an event. You know, now we are in which.
Ninth. The last one was the ninth.
Yeah, the last was the ninth. So the first one was 10 years ago, almost. And I think it started bigger. It started with several hundred people. And the last one had 8,000.
I don't know if it was a lot.
8,000 people.
Thousands, yes.
1 week talking about open source. And so it's maybe from the 8,000... 1 or 2,000 from the region, and the other 6,000 from other Brazilian states, other countries in South America, and other countries in the world. Yeah, and they spend 1 week talking about open source.
And is that to interrupt? Is that the largest free sort of free software event in the world?
In the world, I don't know. In Brazil, for sure. In Latin America, for sure.
Yeah.
In the world, I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. Well, you have to do that research.
Let's go to the site. And there are lots of, nowadays, lots of companies that... Fisli.org.br. Many sponsors from... It was April de 2008. Porto Alegre, Rio Grande do Sul. Ah, 7,417 participants, the number of people that participated. And they have lots of events, and they store everything in digital video, so you can watch this TV Software Livre, the recorded videos. And so all the big companies, this is the largest software one of the largest
content provider
in Brazil.
So newspaper.
One of the largest telephone company with the ISP, Google, you know, Globo, the largest TV, and these ones you know. And then government.
Hours.
Companies, banks, Brazilian bank, and things like that. Ministries, and this is the federal government. So. They have very good support for lots of places.
Huge amount of support.
Yeah. Well, to make an event with almost 8,000 people, it costs a lot. So they do. So maybe you should take a look at a bit
on the history of this event to see. It would be nice to know
how many people there were 10 years ago in the first one. But and Lula only came to power 5 years ago. So.
Yeah.
So it's not something that started 5 years ago. But then, and then when Lula came to power, we had an informal prime minister, which was José Dirceu, and he was informal prime minister, but he had a formal role. It's called Ministro da Casa Civil in Brazil. It's a special minister to take care of policies and whatever. And he was very strong in favor of open source software. He's a guy from the Workers' Party. Mm-hmm. And then he put Sergio Amadeu, who's the guy that you are going to interview, to coordinate the open source in the Brazil, the federal government in 2003 or 4.
Not so sure. Yeah. But they're trying to make free software on government agencies a policy.
But then things started to grow. But then, 1.5 years or maybe 2 years after we got elected, there was a big corruption scandal, and José Dirceu was one of the guys involved. It's not proved that. It doesn't have anything to do with open source. It's other stuff. You don't know about this scandal, right?
I do, but I don't know much about the details.
Well,
Nobody knows. Probably what happened is that they were using money that they got during the election to support the campaign.
It's not taking money, not for personal gain, but maintaining political power.
That's probably what happened. But so they got non-declared money during the campaign, so that they got money that was not declared under the table. And then when the government started, in Brazil, it's very difficult to have support in the Congress. And no party has majority, so you must make arrangements with other parties. And I'd say that 80% of the Congress members are corrupt. So one of the ways, or maybe the only way, I don't know if it's the only way, I don't. One of the ways is to bribe them. So
they call it Caixa 3 or something.
Caixa 2. So what seems that they did that, the Workers' Party in the power got like 50 congressmen from other parties, mostly, and paid a monthly payment so they would vote with the government. And some people say that José Dirceu, this guy that was saying it was prime minister, was the guy organizing that. He denies, and there is no proof, but he was removed from office, and when he left, I think Sergio Amadeu also left, because the ministry changed, and they are still in favor of open source, but then there were some key figures promoting that are not there anymore. So I think it lost some of the power. If that scandal didn't happen, then nowadays we'd probably be much better. That was 5 years ago.
And do you think you're saying that that's had any impact on the open source movement? Or
the open source using the government.
It has had an effect on using the government.
Yes. It was increasing like this, and then this guy was kicked out, and it started to change the speed very rapidly. It didn't go down, I think, but stopped going up in the speed that it was going, and then it's very slowly getting. Recently, for example,
1 year ago, the Banco do Brasil, the Brazil bank, state bank, adopted open source in the 50,000 machines they have in their banks. You go to the Brazilian bank there and see it to open an account. The guy is using a Linux machine with OpenOffice. And this was about 1 year ago, so it's still going on to that direction.
Because I noticed, because I'm actually sitting the Bank of Brazil when I go to Brasilia, I was quite, another thing I found quite interesting was I flew TAM when I came out here, and as soon as the on-flight entertainment system booted up, it was in Linux.
Really?
Which I...
Were you happy? Did you get worried?
I don't think I've... I mean, it's been a while since I've taken a long-haul flight, but I don't think I've ever taken a flight and... Well, you don't normally see this on the boot sequence from the start, no. But I don't think I've ever seen been on a flight, certainly, where they've had a Linux... running those systems on Linux. So that's quite interesting, so... I don't know how that fits in, but I guess it's the seeming sort of culture of open source use in Brazil.
Yes, but Microsoft still dominates. If you look at the desk, use of the OS in desktops, it's probably 99%.
Albeit
Windows.
Pirate copies.
Either pirate or legal copies of Windows. So the Brazilian government, I don't know if you're familiar, but should be, has programs to lower the taxes of lower end computers to make computers more accessible. And it's a program that worked very well. So if you look at the numbers, it's number of people that have computers is increasing a lot in Brazil. And this program, and you have even more tax cuts if it's based on a configuration that the government dictates, which is based on Linux. But what happens a lot of times is that the guy that buys the machine with Linux and then buys a pirate copy for 10 reais of Windows and puts it there.
Yeah,
I actually have a friend who makes a living doing this for people.
Yeah, but... So it's open source creating business, right?
Yeah, you may say that.
Illegal business in this case. So, yeah, so Brazil is a good place for open source, but it's not the heaven of open source. Microsoft still dominates a lot of that.
And again, I mean, this is something I'll ask the government people when I meet them, but I mean, how does open source, fit in with other technology initiatives that the government have for development, or not necessarily the government, but one of the other things I'm interested in finding out about while I'm over here is this seeming telecentros, these telecentros for sort of, I know, social inclusion or education projects, and I'm interested to know if, from my perspective, you know, if that means that people are becoming more literate or they're improving their numeracy skills, but going on from that, someone from a background that didn't necessarily have or wouldn't have access to education in the past can now possibly become a programmer or that's possible or not, but and if these sort of telecentros and maybe a combination of that and open source is leading to more people becoming technically literate and possibly starting their own businesses or becoming active
you answer.
I don't know. I think that's the idea that drove the movement to create telecentres, and I think that would be a very great thing. And I suspect it's true, but I don't have any data. I don't know if the government actually collects some kind of data regarding that. But what I do know is that most, if not all, of TeleCentro users actually do not have computers at home. So they don't have access to computers anywhere else but at the TeleCentro.
I missed the question. You are asking if the TeleCentro helped promote the creation of new software developers?
This is my hypothesis.
These people are almost illiterate. And a software developer would be very, very, very well educated. So
I'll tell you a bit more about my background, because I've worked on projects in India, and one of the things that I was struck by when in comparison to the UK, obviously, and I know this isn't the same for Brazil, but labour costs are much lower in India, much lower than they are in Brazil. But because of the low labour costs, people would throw companies would throw people a problem, so you'd have like five people working on it, five times the number of man hours.
But in software development, that doesn't work. If I had the choice to hire in Brazil, for example, one programmer making $5,000 per month, I prefer than hiring five programmers making $1,000 per month. The one guy with $5,000 would do a better job. I like two people working together, so I'll prefer two guys making $3,000 each. Then it's writing software is different from just constructing a table. To construct a table, the amount that takes is proportional to the number of people that are working. Software development is not like that. So you must have very well educated people to do that, with university degrees, for example.
Because my hypothesis that came from that outside of its it being an economic organization was. It was the amount of time people would seem to have to be messing around on the computer, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they become an efficient programmer. But I was wondering if through the exposure or the access to technology, as you were saying, I guess I'm assuming this is the idea, if someone spends enough time messing around with the computer, especially at an earlier age, and they have direction, which is obviously the key thing, they become technically literate.
I think the goal is that they become technically skilled to do simpler jobs than software development. For example, to work in a office, in an accounting office that uses Excel and Word and things like that. Then I think it makes a big difference, because Brazil needs 1 million people capable of working in Excel.
Mm.
And there are jobs for 1 million people working with Excel. There's an economy, but there are no jobs for 1 million programmers and 1 million people doing software development.
Do you think that I think the key thing is obviously the direction. And I don't know. I'm going to one NGO that I'm in contact with to see what they're doing with their telecentrals, but. Are there also programs, more advanced programs for getting people involved in development? Because I think the impression I got from people I saw in India was that just through natural interest and the amount of time people seem to have, they just spend hours messing around with. I mean, obviously, some of them would be university educated, but. I was wondering if just through personal interest, people could go from low level skills, which are over a number of years, and become, start coding or messing around with code.
Yeah, we have this barrier, which is the person must have a university degree or be a university student to be able to develop software. In Brazil, this is like 5%. I don't know how many percent of the people go to the university.
I think it's much less than 5%. It's 3 or 2.
Yeah. It's,
probably completely different from England, which I think 50% go to the university.
Possibly, yeah.
More, more. In Brazil, is I think it's 5K, I think it's less than 5% of the people go to the university. So it's, we're talking about very little people. It's, and it's completely different from this program, this Telecentros, which is for
a lot much of lower, much lower level skill sets.
Yeah.
Actually,
And in Brazil, these 3 or 4%, they don't go to Telecentro because they already have computers at home or in the university. So it's different people we are talking about.
I found some. I went to this Computador para Todos portal, which is the university, the government program for making to lower the price of the computers. They have a just a news saying from June the 2nd, saying that the Ministry of
Communications
said that until the end of this month, all the cities in Brazil will have a Telecentro, which is Brazil has 5,000 cities. They say that the 5,000 cities will have a Telecentro until the end of this month. But I like this also, this data. Last year, 10 million TVs were sold in Brazil, but more than 10.5 million computers were sold in Brazil, more computers than TVs were sold. And they say that in this year, it's probably 40 million computers will be. So Brazil will become the third country in the world in terms of new computers.
And is that that's computers to head of population? Or?
But that's probably absolute. Because Brazil is a big country.
Yeah,
Brazil would be the third.
Yeah. Brazil has a lot of people and... And people are start now because of this program and because the economy is doing well, people are buying more computers. So
people's do you know much about the one laptop per child, that MIT project? I haven't heard about it in the last 18 months, but is that something that the Brazilian government were linked to or interested in as well?
Yes, the Brazilian government had a open a formal call for proposals, and they separated billions of reais for buying the computers. But then all the proposals were much more expensive than the minimum amount of the computer that the Brazilian was willing to pay the Brazilian government, because they say it's a $100,
yeah.
But it was like the best was like, remember, 300.
$225. The cheapest.
The cheapest proposal or the cheapest?
The cheapest one laptop per child is costs $225, I think.
But you think? But they are saying the cheapest in the world. It's not necessarily that one that the government.
Oh yeah, the cheapest in the world.
Yeah. Because the Brazilian government, I think, said that it must be at most I think the Brazilian government said we want to buy 1 million of these, and each one must be at most $180. But then the cheapest proposal, I think it was $250 in that one. And then they cancelled. Said no, we don't want it.
Actually, I believe in some places Intel had this classmate computer, which is competing with one laptop per child, and they actually won in some states or cities.
But pilot programs using, but it's a few, at most a few thousands. But the government wanted to buy 1 million. It had already the money to buy 1 million,
but it was too much.
But the $100 laptop was costing $250. So maybe in the future, if they said that if the future you can make sell it to me for $150,
and no bite. Like, so maybe next year again they'll try again.
But anyway, I don't think that necessarily putting the 1 million computers in the hands of 1 million kids would
make much difference.
I'm not sure.
Again,
depends,
I guess it's
what they do with that.
I guess it's the people to actually show people to do.
Depends on how to use it.
Yeah.
What kind of software would be running there?
Rather than just playing games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just playing games, or even if they're just typing a word processor, I don't know if it makes much difference. Actually, I don't think that 8-year-old kids should be typing a word processor. They should be writing, learning how to write with their hands.
Learning how to write up.
Yeah.
Does within the USP, are there particular policies relating to open source? Because again, you know, the government seems to be adopting it. Obviously, the companies is being adopted in companies for business reasons. Within academic institutions, is there also for similar reasons that it's adopted in business?
Our institute, because the Department of Computer Science is hosted here. The Department of Science is keen of open source for many years. Then we use a lot here of open source software. I'll say 50% of our professors have the desktops Linux. In our department, is more than that. Our department, 90% of the professors use Linux in their desktops. I'm considered a traitor because in my laptop I have Mac OS and not Linux. and the students all use it, and all our coursework is based on open source. But this is our institute. It's not
it's not the case
across the university, and even the university has a software development sector in the university related to the university presidency that writes the software that manages the university, the operational software. And they have there a long history of using proprietary software. And it's starting to change now. So they're starting to use open source tools, but it's not university policy. In the state of São Paulo in particular, open source is not...
This is one of the governments that...
it's an opposition.
It's not PT government. And therefore there's not...
Never. The governor was never from PT. And it's kind of stupid. Maybe in Brazil, because the open source movement was so related to one party, and a party that's against PT because of ideological reasons tends not to favor open source because they say, this is a PT thing.
Affiliated with.
Yeah.
That's another thing I'm interested in.
It's not a rule because the Telecentro do Estado, the state Telecentro.
I don't know exactly how this ended up, but in the beginning, the city used Telecentros based on Linux, which was the PT government. And at the same time, the state was creating Telecentros with a different name, and they were not based on Linux, they were based on Windows. Now, I believe they're being integrated in a single system, and everything is Linux, but it took a while. This has been done now, and Telecentros were created like 10 years ago.
The Telecentros project's it's not a new thing by any means in Brazil.
No.
It
started in São Paulo, city, it started with the PT government, where Sérgio Amadeu was working with the mayor, and at that time it was already some free software boom around the world, and so they decided they need to fill up in the word the digital divide, you know? You had to fix this, and that's where the telecentric idea came from. And the idea was exactly this, bring people to know how, what the hell is a computer, how to use it and interact with it, not something like, oh, computer, something magical from beyond that's only for the people who have the money. That's the original idea. And I remember him saying that he wanted people to use it, to use the internet on the telecenters to exchange recipes, use email, whatever. Do their
poster.
Do a little poster or a banner to put on the front of their store, whatever. They wanted people to use it just like everybody on middle classes. So, but this was a PT thing. And the state had an agreement with Microsoft, which also approached the city, but the city turned them down. But the state took them their licenses almost for free, because it was almost for free. So there's no cost reason to use free software. So let's use proprietary software. And this stayed like that for a long time.
So Microsoft almost pretty much made a donation.
Yeah. To the state, yes.
To obviously,
I don't know the exact terms. They
did the same with the university. So they say that we professors and students can use any Microsoft software for free. The only one that's not for free is the Office suite, but there's a discount even for Office. But and maybe don't write this, but.
Here we don't take that.
We don't.
You use OpenOffice.
Yeah, because they want that, because we are educating the best computer professionals in the country, in the city maybe, at least. And they want the best computer professionals to be raised in the Microsoft environment, but we don't want that.
It's quite interesting, this... The sort of political affiliation with open source, and because, you know, open source, as you were saying, you emphasized earlier on that you know, it's not just a government thing. There's obviously business rationale for using open source software, as there is in any part of the world. And is this, how does this this sort of this political affiliation with open source color the open source debate? Because, you know, if there's a business rationale, is that...
I think this connection is more implicit. Maybe you can tell. The connection between being open source and proprietary, being from one, from the PT party or another party, is implicit. Nobody said that, these are the... He wants to use open source with
you, must
PT
be,
guys.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, would businesses not use open source software? Because there's a... There was one company I rang up, and they were a small company, so I guess this, maybe the scale matter, in Sao Paulo. And I rang up to see if they would be interested in speaking to me, and they said that they didn't, we don't use open source here, it's the government. The governments are really big on open source, but we use Windows. Whether they're licensed copies of Windows or not, I don't know. But I found that interesting because, and I can understand that there's maybe the business rationale was Windows is more stable. I don't know what the decision making was. But I found that interesting that it seemed to be, it was almost like a dirty, open source was a dirty word. I don't know if that's.
Yeah, I think that guy was not well informed. If you go to the best companies here, they do use open source, then and they wouldn't say that open source is not stable. Maybe they use Windows in their desktop, but they say we use because everybody uses them.
Compatibility issues or...
Compatibility is easy to interact with others. They wouldn't say that Linux is not stable. Mainly because in the service they use Linux, because it's much more stable. So... If you look at the companies in the servers, in the important servers, most of the time it's Linux.
I mean, this was a small business. It didn't have anything to do with technology.
I didn't have anything to do.
No,
some people didn't know
I'm sure you didn't, but it was interesting that the sort of the connotations associated with the way he said, oh, you know, it's, the government's really big on open source, but and I'm wondering how that does affect people. So, you know, people that aren't, don't know about technology.
People tend to think that normally in the history of humankind, if you have to pay for something and another one is free, normally the paid one is better.
I've forgotten that there's a law, isn't there? The more you pay for something, the better it is.
Yeah, but in open source, maybe it's the first time in human history that's different.
Not necessarily. Or people think maybe think there's a catch. I mean,
yeah.
I'd say this is a lot of ignorance. People don't. If you ask this guy about Linux and free software like 3 or 4 years ago, probably he would look at you and say, "What the hell are you talking about?"
Mm.
Now they have heard something about this weird stuff called free software that the government is pushing because of the government push, but they don't know nothing about it, so they just dismiss it like that because they don't know it. Well, yeah, the government says this weird stuff, you know, just like trying to solve the problem of water in Northeast, but I don't have a problem with water here, so I have nothing to do with that. And I think that's the reason for this. They don't know. People don't know. They at least have heard about it now because the government has pushed it a little bit, but this is just ignorance. They don't know nothing about it.
Well, from what you were saying earlier, there could be the possibility of almost a backlash because of the it being associated with a political party, but maybe if that changes open source,
it might happen. For example, if Lula won't be re-elected because he can be elected only once, re-elected only once. So the federal government will change 2 years from now if the opposition gets back there. Everything can happen. They can maintain open source, they can increase open source, or they can go back.
Yeah, but this is, I believe, strictly at the government level. This was not would not have such a huge impact on open source outside.
And the private sector in the industry,
at least for now,
it's growing and it will continue to grow. Mm.
For business reasons that are completely separate from
political. The good companies already have contact with open source, and they know it's a lot of the products are very high quality, and they are, it's helping their business, so it's helping them make money. So
yeah.
It doesn't matter what the government says, if the companies want to make money,
it's helps almost them. Completely. There's two separate things going on. Fair enough, the government using open source for their own ends, but the private sector haven't taken up open source just because.
No, definitely not. Quite on the contrary, I think the only impact the government has on the adoption of open source software outside of the government is probably not happening in Brazil yet. But it's the fact that once you have a lot of people, and government is a lot of people using open source software, it creates a bigger market, and it changes the landscape of the market. So in this sense, yes, the government may have a big impact, but I don't think this is happening yet, just as much as it could. What's happening in the private sector is pretty much independent from what's going on in the government, I think, now. For now.
Because another thing that I've going back to in the past with the government's market reserve policy for computers and manufacturing certain other peripherals and various products. There was obviously a lot of the likes of, say, not necessarily Microsoft personally, but corporations outside of Brazil that disagreed with that policy because it obviously prevented them from entering the market and they were denied a market share. Is there a similar thing going on with open source software? And because I know, because again, this is just from reading news stories in the last couple of years, and I think I've heard at least twice, and this is reported on the BBC website, that Bill Gates flies in
tries to meet up with Lula, and Lula snubs him, and he flies back. I mean, exactly how it happens, I don't know, but there's these sort of stories, and obviously, I mean, the developers that I know that, again, work with open source, you know, there's certain people like that, because, you know, it's sort of like open source is winning over the over Microsoft, people that don't like Microsoft. But how much is the open source movement sort of related to that as well? I've sort of digressed from my original question. what I'm trying to say.
You ask and answer the question at the same time.
I think what I'm trying to say is this earlier the motivations for the market reserve policy, which there was the sort of nationalist interest, there was the military involved, and you know, this came out in the pre-democratic era, but. You know, this isn't free software is completely different. It's not like, you know, they're maintaining high tariffs and various trade barriers to stop people entering the market. But there's obviously still actors in the US that would prefer Brazil to be I don't know, going down a road that makes their big corporates more money, and. Open source software almost sidesteps the intellectual property rights debate, because by virtue of the licenses, it does observe intellectual property rights.
From what I saw and read, the only company that lobbied for or against anything related to this area in Brazil was Microsoft. And it's obvious their side. And we read dozens or hundreds of times they talking to government officials, or they trying to sell in the press the problems with open source model, and saying that countering the attacks of the open source movement. So the open source movement for many years pushed for the approval of laws saying that the government or the levels should use open source, or use open source preferably, or in particular times when buying computers with open source. Or with Linux, and then all the times Microsoft was saying that this is not ethical, because it was putting some players out of the competition, and so what I'm trying to say is Microsoft is a big force, but it's the only force that I've
heard. Because he's interested in.
I've never heard of any other company or any government pushing Brazil to other direction than the direction it's going. And before the Lula government, there were, in the previous government, and the government was going to buy like 1 million computers. I don't remember this, for schools, 1 million desktops, and in the law that they approved, it said that it must have Microsoft Windows, and then the open source community made a big.
This was under Cardoso.
Under Cardoso, the open source community raised and got into the. I don't know how to say in English, in the judicial system. Made a lawsuit against the government and was able to stop that process. I think, and what they wanted is that, don't say anything about it. It can be either, can be any operating system. That's what the open source wanted.
Yes, because Actually, it is illegal in Brazil. You cannot specify a specific supplier on a call for a product for the government. You must say something like
that. This is against the law, but they do all the time. The government does. The government many times said it must have Windows, because in their minds, Windows is it's such a ubiquitous that they are not favoring a specific manufacturer. But other people think they are, and they won. The open source movement won, but the bad thing is that no computers were bought at all because they stopped the process. And then the government said, nah, "I don't want to do that anymore," and then didn't buy the computers at all.
So now
it seems they are buying. It's 5 or 6 years later.
And that's a web link is a computer.
Well, yeah, this news is about saying that all the schools, this is the ministry, this is the government propaganda, and they are saying that Brazil is leading the digital inclusion in Latin America, and there's no other country in the continent from Mexico down which there's a similar government program in which every city in Brazil, in all the schools, will have broadband internet access. So, and then in the next few years, 142,000 schools will be connected.
But as you say, one of the things that the possibilities that I considered was, with the telecentros and also just the pushing of technology, that there was the possibility of a kind of clientelism, political clientelism going on. I don't know if in terms of not necessarily buying votes, but by favouring certain sections of the population. I don't know.
I think. First, I've never heard of that.
That's just a possibility.
But that's a possibility with yes and with anything.
I know.
With water, with electricity, yeah, any public service, with health service,
yeah,
you can do that. So I think telecentros, it's not worse or better than any other government service with that matter. So there's an unethical governor wanting to do that, he can do that with anything.
And probably he'll have to be more efficient for him to do that with something else like healthcare or schools. Telecentros is from the point of view of the population is probably
the luxury.
Yes, it's a luxury.
It's different from primary healthcare, which is
actually in Brazil there are people that buy votes with food. So, telecentros are way down on the list of ideas to use for that.
Yeah. The poor regular Brazilian won't say, I'll vote for him because he brought a telecentro. They say, I'll vote for him because I got a job, or because he gave me food, or because he gave a health center that I can go to the physician for free. Yeah. We wouldn't have this power yet.
Going back to my question, so, in terms of the scale of businesses, what are your opinions on the possible disadvantages of RSS? If there are any.
With regard to business?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there are. I mean, there are a few. First, we need to create new business models, which is these new business models. We are talking about consulting, training, customization. Because people are more used to, you build a product and you sell that product. A bakery makes a cake and sells the cake. There's no customization. Well, there are some bakeries that do customization, but they sell a product. Well, the fancy ones do customization. They, you can write the name of the people, the birthday. You can sell for much more expensive. But then the software industry need to learn these new ways of making money. So it's something new, and that makes it more difficult because people are not sure. They are sure that if they have a very good software and they can put that in a package and say sell for 1,000 reais each copy, and there are 1,000 people that really need that, then they may know they will make $1 million. They multiply 1 million reais, and they multiply, and they know. The open source model that we are talking about is more chaotic. It's different. They know that they'll give the software for free and then they'll provide customization services. But then how much to charge for the customization support? It's more. I think the model is much more complicated. But this is something we will learn in the next 10 years, and we are learning. And maybe 10 years from now, we'll have a very clear picture. But right now, we have very few examples of successful companies that use this model. And the other more traditional model, we have thousands of history of the human economics. So this is one disadvantage. Another disadvantage is the fact that if you have a closed source model, then you create something new, then you know that no other company would be able to get the knowledge that you created, won't even have access to the knowledge that you created. The only access with the graphical interface of the software, but won't be able to use what's written inside. And even if they look at inside and do a similar product, then you can sue saying that they are stealing if they just look inside. So the companies, this is an advantage. I know I'll do something, I'll invest some money, and nobody will be able to even look at what I did. They only will look at the skin. So if they want to reproduce, they would have to invest a lot of money. If it's open source, then they have the right to look at it and they can build their product based on that. It then depends on the license they can do. For example, if it's BSD license, then they are allowed to change a little bit and sell it, and they don't need to redistribute, right? So the company is not that protected. The intellectual property of the company is not protected that well. On the other hand, there are models that, for example, if I were to start a new company, I would do my software GPL. And because GPL says that you cannot, once it's open and distributed, you cannot close it and sell it, for example. You are forced to redistribute it as open source again. But this doesn't force me to. Since I created it, I still can close it because the person that wrote the software can change the license at any moment. So I can distribute it as GPL, and then I'll have feedback on the source code. I can have people writing plugins and things like that. And at the same time, I can relicense it with a closed license and sell to companies with a closed version if I want. So I can have, like MySQL, now they have dual licensing schemes. So I think this is the model I would try to go after. But it's much more complicated than a new experience. So
this is actually the model that lots of companies are using.
But you're talking IT,
yeah.
And
you're talking. So the alternative is more complicated and it's new, so it's disadvantage. People don't know yet how it works, and people are experiencing. We're talking about disadvantages. More disadvantages. I think these are the only disadvantages I know. Some people say that in open source, you don't have a person to sue or to... If something goes wrong, you're using OpenOffice and something goes wrong, then there's no one you can ask for help. Or you can sue. If that's better for you. But I'm sure that nobody sued Microsoft because Word did something wrong, because Word had a bug. So it's, I think it's just...
I'm sure that's in their license that they're not liable to the under their...
Yeah.
That's
anyway,
probably unenforceable in some places, but still it's in the license.
But anyway, I think it's a known issue. People say that, but I don't think that's true. The fact that they don't have someone to sue, but they won't sue anyone anyway. Even if they need, they won't.
That comes up to
issue.
Certainly in... so say the UK people will just pay, they because they don't know any better, or just go and buy Windows or whatever, some proprietary software, because they, even if it's real or imagined, they feel that they're going to have better support than if they go down the open source route. And maybe if we're talking about technology that doesn't have support built in, and they're not technically literate. They're going to go down the proprietary route rather than the open source route for the uninformed.
Yes, and maybe in Brazil there's more training courses for software developers, for example, related to proprietary software. So if you can buy a course on Oracle or Sybase database, you know where to go. You go to the Oracle representative, you pay very, very high. But you can have the course at any time. But if you need a MySQL course, then I'm not very sure. There are a few companies, but then it's a very small company. Maybe you're not so sure of the quality of that course, and you don't know next year if you need this course again, if the company will still exist. So that's another disadvantage. And even support, if the Oracle breaks, you call Oracle. If MySQL breaks, you can call, there's a solid MySQL foundation in the US, but they won't have a Brazilian representative, then you need to call if they, either they come here, or they suggest someone from here to help you. So this is another disadvantage. That's likely, we hope, we are building this competence center to hope change that. So we hope that within 5 years from now, we'll have a much better support for them. Companies providing support for these open source.
So CCSL, is that going forward, is it likely to sort of split away from the university, or is it going to remain?
In our case, will be always, it's a university thing. It's a formal center of the university. So we intend to provide courses and to provide this kind of support, but this is the short and medium term goal. I think the long term goal is to make the market and to create the means for the creation of companies that will provide that service. In 10 years from now, I hope that we'll be out of the business of providing support and of teaching these basic things, because there will be dozens of companies in São Paulo and in Brazil providing that service. That's our long-term goal. To put ourselves out of business. And then we can do other things. We are in university, like to do research. Or we can
give more advanced courses. But right now we need to give these basic courses because very few people provide the basic courses. But if we educate more people and we repeat enough times that our students should create small startup companies based on open source, then that will happen. Two years ago, I started to tell my students, you shouldn't go work in a big bank and become a small ant in a big corporation, because you get a good salary, but your impact in the world in Brazil will be nothing. You should think about getting two of your colleagues and founding a new company and look at a good topic for your company, either developing high technology products or providing consultancy support, and do your business, and then you can make a big impact. So started to say that about 1 or 2 years ago, and I think that if we repeat that enough times and help them, then they'll do it. Then they're starting to do it, I think.
To do in terms of the scale of business, and this sort of links from that question about the disadvantages, you know, smaller businesses, and again, it depends on knowledge, but is it easier for a larger business to go down the open source route, or what are the disadvantages or advantages depending on the scale of your business? And I'm just talking about that guy that I spoke to that was a small business, nothing to do with technology. He, because of his information available to him, he settled with Windows because it was reliable. I'm assuming that's why he settled with it. But going back to the scale of business, what are the disadvantages and advantages depending on your scale?
I think it depends more on how knowledgeable the people that work there, the business use of open source technologies and software. For example, I think it's very easy for a small business in which the people are knowledgeable. For example, get any of our three students that graduate, they know everything about open source. And if they create a business, then for them it's very easy to do anything based on open source, and they'll do very well. They'll do bad in terms of marketing, because we don't teach marketing and business administration. They'll have problems with that, but they won't have any technical problem with open source. And open source is the best thing for them. On the other hand, if you get people that graduated from a private university that does everything based on Microsoft, then probably they would have a hard time doing things in open source, because they need to learn, they are not used to that. So it depends more on that thing. And then in big companies, I think it's also the same thing. They must have people that's knowledgeable in the open source, or at least take some time to learn.
Good.
So I think it's doable in both cases.
You mentioned private universities there. Is there any particular private universities any less likely to use open source technology than a public university?
There are a few serious private universities in Brazil, and there are many universities that are, we say that they are diploma shopping centers. They want to make money. That's the only goal of the private, some of these private universities, to make money. And so they want to maximize the amount of money that come in, minimize the expenses, and print diplomas. And they are not worried with the education of the students at all. And I think that a lot of these universities make agreement with Microsoft. So if they can, so the Microsoft gives the software for free or with a good price,
Or Microsoft donates a new lab, and as long as everything runs Windows and there's a big Microsoft logo somewhere, of course.
So they do it, yeah.
Of course. If I were Microsoft, I would do it.
Yeah. And it's easier because most of the people use Microsoft. So the default case is to use Microsoft. If you must have a reason for going against the mainstream and picking something different.
In the mind
for
of
example,
the administrator, you're solving a problem. You know, you have to have this laboratory with computers running Microsoft. So when you make a deal with Microsoft, you win twice.
Mm.
You win the laboratory, you solve that problem, and you save some money. So it's great.
Yeah, they must have a good reason to go to move out of the mainstream and go open source. And since their goal is only to make money, there's no reason. And they graduate much more people than the good schools and the public schools. And everybody knows that a person graduated from a public school in Brazil knows much better, it's a much better professional technical terms, but they have larger quantity.
This in terms of higher education. It's different at basic and high school. It's on the contrary.
Yeah, the public school system is very bad for primary school, and then the university becomes the opposite. The public universities are the best. And the bad. There are a few exceptions. There are a few exceptions of good private universities.
And are they the ones that the Catholic?
Book is one of them, because it belongs to the church, the Catholic Church. Another one,
the FGV.
FGV is kind of related to the government.
It's kind of public, yeah. But there are a few others. If we think a lot, I can think of
yeah,
like exceptions. Mackenzie is not bad.
Yeah.
In terms of going back to my original hypothesis and open source facilitating economic development, or bringing about different economic outcomes than proprietary software. I mean, there's obviously the static outcomes, as you know, there's no cost if you're starting up a business. So that seems to be the most obvious thing. I mean, when I say to people as I'm studying open source, they say, well, of course, it's free. But it's obviously a bit more complicated than that. In the long term, what are the sort of dynamic...
There's another reason is when you're developing software that you want to be used by many clients, it can be cheaper for the clients also, because if you do something based on Oracle, then your client, your customer, you need to buy Oracle also and pay the Oracle license. If your business is based on PostgreSQL, then your customer doesn't need to buy Oracle, and so the final cost of the product you are selling is lower, and you are not giving profit to Oracle. You're giving profit only to yourself, because PostgreSQL is free. For example, this company, they came to talk to me last Friday, a bunch of them. They have this proprietary Windows only version based of us ERP software, and it's based on Microsoft Access. And then 2 years ago, they started to do a completely open source version. And they said that to our customers that our product will be much more cheap, a little bit cheaper, because they don't need to buy other stuff from other vendors. And they'll just buy our solution. Everything else is free. So they wanted to collaborate with the Competence Center. And they told me that they want to do
they actually want to give the software for free and then get money in training and customization and consultancy. I was happy to see they saying that. Because it's a small company, it's not a big company. It's like 8 employees, but they have 10 years of experience in this market. And so I was surprised. It's a company that they are making money for 10 years. They make money with that proprietary-based solution, but then they decide that they didn't want to sell the software anymore. They wanted to give the software for free and get money in other ways.
Changing their model.
Yeah, I was surprised with that.
Do you think that links in with... Because at the moment, I must admit, I haven't really followed things over the last 12 months, but, you know, Microsoft are talking about opening up. To what degree is another question, another something else, but even Microsoft is talking about going open source and, you know, this is people's business model, is this being influenced maybe by the sort of proliferation of open source?
I don't know.
People changing their business model.
I don't know. Anyway, I don't think this is a rule yet. I think an exception. I don't know.
I don't think Microsoft will actually do this in the short term. But one thing Microsoft is not, is they are not stupid. So, of course, they realize that in 10 or 15 years, the landscape of computer software will be quite different. And they obviously don't want to be left behind. So they are probably working towards getting closer to the open source model. If, even if they don't get an open source company, I think it's inevitable that in a couple of years they will have some things that are open source. They will push a lot for their for the software as a service model and for services and customization and less on the licensing. Because it doesn't take a genius to realize that this is a shrinking market. Not yet, but it will become shrinking market, so
I need to do some other things, so I suggest that we finish our part, but then you can continue talking to him, so maybe you can, and I think you should ask him about your initial hypothesis that I answered, but he didn't, about which open source helps promote the business, etc.
So you ask him about that.
Thing is, you can't record, right?
I don't know. This is really annoying because
you can go to. I suggest you go to LCPD, to our lab,
and okay. I don't have how to hack. Oh, I brought the microphone.
But you don't have cable.
Yes, I brought the cable. I sent you a text message today.
Yeah, I have 100 machine, 100. Mail in my mailbox.
Not a mail. I sent a text message on